us on KMOX. Redbird Rush Hour follows us. Pre-game, Cardinals game, 6:10 again, 6:15?
The pre-game?
No, the game.
The game is 6:45.
Oh, 6:45. Yep. Very nice. Yep. I couldn't have been more wrong. Voice of St. Louis, Matt Pauly joins us. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, I've really, it's like, you know that, chart of the evolution of man where we go from like a squirrel into like modern man. I picture KMOX like that, but it goes backwards with me. Like, you know, you go from Jack Carney and then you end up with Dave Glover talking about how he almost farted on Michael Calhoun. So I apologize. How about that game last night, man? Just pure friggin' fun.
It was an all-time pitching performance when you look at a lot of the numbers. Bernie had a tweet actually using game score and compared it to a Bob Gibson start. I mean, he gave up one hit. It wasn't hit hard. It was a hit that had a 17% hit probability. And that's just, you know, based off, you know, exit velocity and things like that. I don't think it was a play that Blaze Jordan should have made over at third. It was out of his reach for sure. But that was something special. And one of my favorite things about last night's game, he got his second strikeout in the fifth inning. And he had 9 strikeouts in the game.
Yeah.
He had 1 strikeout through the first 4 innings. Yeah. And it was, man, that was a special, special performance last night from Dustin May. It's another reminder of why I love the game. And I hope a lot of people got that reminder as well, because that was something special that the people, and very few people left early last night. That was a pretty full ballpark at the end of the night.
You know what I loved? I was at the ballpark when Ken Griffey Jr. hit his 500th home run, and I cried because he got a standing ovation. And it just, last night, the ovation that Dustin got when he gave up that hit, I hate to be just such a homer, but it feels like St. Louis is back. Right? We were kind of in a fog for a couple, 3 years. But whether it's tarps off or it's the young team or it's the winning record, whatever it is, it just feels different. If I'm listening to Ricky and John or I'm watching Brad and Chip, you can hear the crowd. You can hear the crowd, and you didn't used to be able to.
Yeah, and look, I'm not trying to make too much of stuff because there's really important things that are happening in our world, in our city, in our region. But in many ways, as goes the Cardinals, as goes St. Louis.
Amen.
And it's really good right now. And even if they fall off, I don't think people are going to love this team less in an extreme way, just because we know who these guys are and how much they care. Think about last night. Nobody on the face of the earth can say that this team does not care. When you watched Mason Wynn make spectacular plays last night, and after that double play he turned, he was all kinds of fired up. Lars Nootbaar, just a few weeks coming off his season debut and still feeling soreness every single day because he's not going to be 100% until a year after the surgery, diving and making a spectacular play in left field. The care that these guys have for playing the game the right way and just the care for the St. Louis Cardinals and being part of the Cardinals, it seeped off the field last night, and it was really cool.
All right, so question for you guys then, because I'll be that guy. Because they were 8 games over 500 at entering play July 1st last year, and same as they are today, they're 8 games over 500. This absolutely feels different, right? Because our expectations were lower. Is it actually different, or is it just our expectations that were different?
Let me go first, and then Matt can say the smart thing.
Don't bet on it.
I do not mean to disparage Mr. Mozeliak in any way. I think he was great. But to me, the difference is Chaim Bloom. I have more trust in Chaim. He has more energy. He's making moves. I don't hear you guys being frustrated on Redbird Rush Hour because why are we doing this, doing that?
Oh, no, it's he's doing a little bit, but it's faster. Wouldn't you agree, Matt? It's a faster timeline than we've seen in the last few years.
Yeah. Like
it does help, though, that
faster.
You have more players close to Major League ready than you had last year. Because last year, all these guys that you're talking about either weren't in the organization or they were a level or two further back.
Right. Look, it's different. It is the and I guess it's a chicken and the egg when it comes to like energy and excitement and
all that
sort of stuff. But even when they were 8-9 games over 500, it didn't have the feeling of what's going on right now. And maybe part of that is, and this is not a shot at a at the clubhouse presence of, say, a Nolan Arenado or even a Miles Michaelis or whatever old guy you want to look at. But maybe just the fact that those guys are not around, and this is a group that's led by a lot of really young dudes, and there's energy that goes along with it. Maybe that's what we're feeling, mm-hmm. but it is different. It is 100% different. That doesn't mean that the final results at the end of the year are going to be different. I'm not saying that. I think they will be, but I'm not going to be shocked if they're not. But this feels different. When I walk into the clubhouse every single day, when I'm, you know, watching the game from field level in the eighth and ninth inning, everything feels different.
Yeah, well, I mean, younger players are always going to have a different energy, right? And in a lot of ways, and Matt, you know, we've talked about this a lot. We actually talked about it in the offseason and in spring training too. A lot of ways, young players are repressed by veterans. In all places. That's not a St. Louis thing, because anytime you're a young player, you're going to defer to the guys that have been around.
Yeah.
You are going to, just like if you're in a regular workplace and you've got people that have been there 20 years, you're not coming in and taking over. You're coming in and fitting in. But what you're fitting into now is more suited to what you're used to, because it's more guys that are your age.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've mentioned this a couple times, and I try not to bring everything back to Milwaukee, but I was there as that what it is now was really starting to build. And I think the Cardinals would love to build something very similar to that. And one of the pieces, I think, that of the secret sauce that Milwaukee had was there was this ability for guys to walk into the clubhouse for the first time ever and instantly be themselves, which is a very rare thing in Major League Baseball, because a lot of times guys walk into a Major League clubhouse for the first time and go, how am I supposed to act? What does it mean to be a big leaguer? And look, there's lines that you don't cross. I'm not saying guys just walk in and be a clown, but being a clown is a long difference from being able to just be who you are as a person. And I think the Cardinals are much closer to that right now than they have ever been in my years being around the team going back to 2022.
And now, my personal view is I do find this more exciting, and I do find this to be better because we're not looking at a bunch of players who are at the end of the road.
Great point.
We're looking at players who are good now but might even be better, right? I mean, J.J. Weatherholt might even be better than what we've seen. Same thing for Nathan Church. Same thing for all of these guys that you're starting to get a good look at. And last year, it was a lot of guys that were, even when they were good, it was near the end of the road for Sonny Gray, for Nolan Arenado, for Miles Michaelis, for Eric Fetty. They're not going to be around the big leagues for that much longer. So it's a different thing when you can see upside and potential versus you're seeing the end of the road in the rearview mirror.
So
you can't really see that in the rearview, can you?
We are professionals, especially you guys and Bernie and, you know, all the sports team, Aki. But we're emotional, right? We love the Cardinals. Yeah. What do people outside of St. Louis, the other professionals, whether it's the teams, the players, the managers, the guys who follow sports, what are we thought of outside of St. Louis? This team.
Whew, that's good. You know, actually, it's interesting you say that, because Ollie today on Gas House Gang actually mentioned the fact that he got a text recently from somebody who covers the game nationally about how the Cardinals are the at bats that they take 1 through 9, you know, innings 1 through 9 are so locked in and they just don't give anything away. I don't know. I'm almost stalling to answer because I really don't know. I think the expectations were so low. The team has played so much better. I think for some people, there's still probably this sense of, you know, the Cardinal devil magic, and it's just going to go back to them being who they've been before. But I think for most of the baseball world nationally, they're still very much in a wait and see when it comes to the Cardinals.
But it's changing. It is changing. I'm seeing a lot more things from the national guys. I think it was Rosenthal. I think he said something along the lines of the Cardinals are looking more like buyers than sellers. And Jim Bowden said that. I think even today he might have said that. If you look at power rankings, the Athletics power rankings has the Cardinals 7th.
Hmm.
That's not just looking
that's
at
crazy.
Your record. That's their staff ranking teams. And the previous one, they were 13. So it certainly is appearing that the national view is turning more and more, because the deeper you get into the season playing well, the more people are going to believe it.
Could have you ever imagined this year the Cardinals having a power ranking by a legitimate organization at number 7?
No.
Like, it's crazy that this is happening.
And right behind them, by the way, is the White Sox.
Yeah.
At number 8, which would have been maybe even more unbelievable, well, coming where they were
coming
from.
You know what else is hopeful to me? We have a power ranking of 7th, and we know we have some flaws.
Oh, yeah.
That can be fixed.
Well, this is why I'm super excited for the rest of the run compared to what I was at this time last year. Because, A, they're showing us that not good enough is not good enough. Right? You've got position players. Pedro Pais wasn't good enough. Victor Scott wasn't good enough. Nolan Gorman, not good enough. They're replaced. They're going and getting younger guys and giving them a chance. And I think, Matt, as you and Bernie and I talked about last night, I think that's coming soon for the pitching staff. You got a couple guys, especially in the rotation, in Liberatore and Leahy, that are not good enough. And I don't think this is a season where you're just going to let not good enough play out.
Yeah, I don't know. Listening to Ollie today, I mean, that was kind of addressed. And that the question, or I guess the answer, went back to, don't forget what this season was when the year got started. So
yeah, but they said stuff like that about Nolan Gorman 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And now he's in Memphis. I mean, there's going to be a point where, hopefully, if they're consistent, right, if they're looking at things consistently, which I have no reason to think Chaim Bloom isn't, based on his actions, if they're being consistent, you have to have the same standard for pitchers that you had for position players.
I don't know if they do, especially when it comes to like a Leahy, because they wanted to try this thing out this year. But to your point, Kevin, like, what else is the manager going to say? The manager has to support the guys on the team in the clubhouse. So I don't know. I think it's a really interesting thing to just watch here moving forward, because I think it was easier for them to make those decisions with position players than it's going to be for them to make those decisions with pitchers.
You know, yeah, I'm not sure why they view it that way, though. I think you're right. I think you're totally right. But I don't know why they would view it that way, because even moving Leahy to the bullpen doesn't have to be permanent. If you move him to the pen, look, I just watched the Tampa Bay Rays take Griffin Jacks, who's not started a major league game in years, and shove him right into their major league rotation after he failed to close for them. You can do it. He can go back the other way in a month if they have to.
I think if you make the decision to put Leahy in the bullpen, you're saying that the starting experiment with Kyle Leahy is over.
Maybe so, but it doesn't have to be definitive. It's only definitive if the decision makers say that it is, because I'm watching other teams do it. I'm watching other teams take guys from the bullpen to starter who did not come into spring training ready to start, like Leahy did.
There would have to be outside forces to push it back in the other direction.
Injuries. Yeah.
I have not seen you this ramped up since someone said that Bucky's is better than Wally's.
I don't think that we have to be so rigid about it. And again, my hope is that the Cardinals are becoming less rigid about things like those.
Yeah.
Because the logic behind it, and this is not your logic, Matt, this is the way the team is doing that, way they kind of view things, or at least in the past has viewed things. Like, well, we don't want to just bail on it. Well, you can go back to it. If you don't think he's doing well enough right now, you can move him to the pen. And if somebody gets hurt, you can slide him right back to the rotation, because other teams do it all the time.
But then you're moving him back to the rotation not because you think he can be a starter. You're moving him back to the rotation because you don't have another option.
That's fine. Again, the Rays are pretty smart. They didn't plan on Griffin Jacks being a starter, but they did it because it was what the circumstances called for.
Yeah.
All right, we will be listening tonight. Make sure you listen to Redbird Rush Hour, my favorite show on KMOX, plus Sports on a Sunday. And the game is at 6:45, I'm told. So 6:45 p.m. for the Cardinals. Thank you, Matt.
You bet. Thank you.
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. Kev's mad today, and now he's mad at Rain Wilson.
Well, that's not now, but yeah, This is
a long-standing beef.
This ties into the thing we talk about with comics all the time, that are like, "Oh, you can't do certain things anymore." Yes, you can. You just have to deal with the consequences of it. Like we were talking about earlier with Nate Bargatze or whatever. But he was doing an interview and he was saying, like, you couldn't even make The Office today because the cancel culture people would come after you. The Office? Was The Office edgy? Because I feel like it was like generic funny for everyone.
Yeah, it's also like the most popular show on streaming. Like, it had a complete revival with Gen Z. They absolutely love that.
Great point.
Show.
It's not being canceled now.
This is why I think he's full of crap. Like, do you even think before you look at these things? Because you're right. Streaming, that show has gotten a huge new group of fans. South Park still exists.
Yeah.
Is there anything that's more edgy than South Park on a general, like, year-in, year-out basis? It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is still being made. That's way edgier than anything The Office ever did. What are you talking about?
I believe NBC has a spinoff of The Office airing currently called The Paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I haven't watched it, but from what I understand, it's like the same showrunners and the same basic idea.
I was going to say same concept. Probably exact same jokes.
I mean, Louis C.K. is back.
Right.
Nobody's getting canceled.
Yeah.
You might take a break for a while when people get mad at you, but they all come back.
Good point.